to a special
Blog Talk Radio.
Okay.
Absolute power corrupts absolutely.
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to a special edition of Fantasy Sports and Politics. It's Mr. FST. I'm not as elite. I am not as upbeat as I usually am. This is not going to be one of our more happy-go-lucky episodes where we're joking around, talking about sports and the politics of sports and the politics of fantasy basketball, football, baseball, whatever the case may be. This is a subject matter that is extremely sensitive and extremely real. Today, we've been tasked, I should say, to discuss community policing. Community policing is something that, in very easy terms, is when the police force is out in the community and they get to know the community. It's a time frame which I feel is very lost. Now, tonight's episode, we're supposed to have a roundtable discussion where we bring on people with views that are for, I guess, actions that may or may not be perceived as aggressive behavior by protesters, rioters, and pro and against police force and what they have done. Not all police officers are bad. Let me get that out there. They're not. Tonight we're supposed to have several people appear. I'm going to call them out by name. Hopefully they'll jump in and jump on board as we get into this conversation. But Rocky Parrish of Rock Deep Nation, he's a former podcaster, but heavy into clothing design. And he has a unique perspective that I wanted to share. Christopher Shirley, a young man that I don't know personally, but we share some common interests in sports, and we're part of a group on Facebook. And, you know, sometimes you friend people. Sometimes you just go off of what they say, and you're like, yeah, you know, that seems like the type of guy or gal that I wouldn't mind, you know, knowing more about just because of their views. Well, you know, I friended Chris. Chris and I did a fantasy or a pool together. But Chris posted some comments about the riots in Baltimore. And that's how this whole roundtable discussion came about. Because even though what he said may not have been false, it was the way that I perceived it that kind of set me off a little bit. And Christopher was more than willing to jump in and defend his viewpoint along with his wife and several others. It's a term that I kind of took offense to, but I really did not go against his viewpoint. It was more of the terminology that he used. He was supposed to come on. Hopefully he can get on. I know where he is. It's kind of tough. It's 7 p.m. where he is, and I know he has to take care of his child and all that. But hopefully he'll get a chance to jump on and speak his voice. And there's another young lady that I work with. Her name is Bree. I'm not going to give out her last name because she said she didn't want to lose her job. But Bree is pro-police, period. Stop, Jerry. I didn't get to you yet, Jerry. Now, Bree is a very, very nice young lady. I mean, her heart is in the right place. She is a special ed instructor who wants to see the best out of everybody. I'm going to read a couple quotes that, you know, we've passed on. Hopefully she'll jump on here. She swore up and down she wouldn't, but I'm going to make her jump on. But her viewpoint is what I want to hear and what I want people to understand, because I don't disagree with her. I don't. It's just there are some areas that we all need to discuss. And maybe if she hears from somebody else other than me, you know, she'll come around. And the other person on the line is my normal co-host, JT, Jerry Taylor. And we all know JT grew up in the 50s and the 40s and the 30s and the 20s. I'm being facetious.
Stop.
He grew up in the 50s. And his viewpoint is way different than all of ours. So I wanted to get his viewpoint because he was actually around when a lot of community policing and civil rights activists were taking shape. So I wanted to get his viewpoint. Right now, we only have Jerry, so I'm going to welcome Jerry into the show. What's up, JT?
What's up, man? How you doing?
I'm doing fine. I want to jump right into it. Firstly,
okay.
I want to set some ground rules here because we were supposed to have that done already, but regardless of your viewpoint, my viewpoint, or anybody else that calls in's viewpoint, we're not here to bash someone's thoughts.
I understand that.
Okay? So there is
that.
No, I'm just getting it out there for anybody that's listening and might want to call in. Mm-hmm. We're not here to make it a racial thing. It isn't a racial thing, in my opinion. Again, this is my opinion. This is FSP's opinion. It is not racial, but there has a lot of racial undertones to it.
That's a contradictory in terms, right? Before you go any further, that's a contradictory
Jerry,
in terms, what you just said.
It is not. Can I finish? Thank you very much, young man.
I'm sorry.
So my aspects or my views may not clash. I mean, they may clash with others. I can see right now they're going to clash with Jerry, even though we think alike sometimes. They're going to clash a little bit. So if you call in to this number, which is 347-637-3220. Again, that number is 347-637-3220. We're going to talk about it. You can also go to the blogtalkradio.com/VICHBK. page, click on the live broadcast and sit in the chat room. Right now we have someone in the chat room just listening in. You can type your views there, but be forewarned, I might not know who you are, but I can always quote you. Whoever guest 2535 is, thank you for listening in. I hope you have some views, and I hope you type something in on the message board so we can get that in there. But right now, I'm going to describe what I believe and what I've learned policing is. I want to thank one of my other coworkers, Renato Garcia. He's doing a paper on it, and it opened my eyes to a lot of things. But Jerry grew up during this time frame, so let me get into it. Community policing is when your mother and your father were little kids, and your grandparents owned the house or lived in an apartment building, and they sat outside talking amongst one another, and the police would walk down the street and talk to them, or with their squad cars and talk to them and get to know the citizens of the community. Community policing is when your mother's parents or aunt or uncle, whoever, didn't feel afraid to talk to the police about anything. Community policing involves citizens taking their streets back by aiding the police officers with information they may have heard or know about. It allows the police to get ahead of certain situations. Community policing, in my opinion, has disappeared Now, the police patrol communities in cars. Some do walk a beat, not all of them, but some do walk a beat. But when you're in your car, your presence is seen but not known. These are my observations again. I grew up in the inner cities of Washington, D.C. in 1980s. I was born in 76, but I was raised in the 80s and 90s. So I saw a lot of things that started to bleed to the distrust of the police. And how the community policing concept started to disappear, in my opinion, during that time frame. Now, that's a brief definition or overview of community policing, but Mr. Taylor actually grew up during that time frame. So, Mr. Taylor, can you please explain what you saw growing up in the 50s and how the police interacted with the community during that time?
Let me put it this way. I'm gonna try to put it as maybe gently as possible. Nothing has really changed. Let me put it that way. And when I say nothing has changed, the attitude, in my opinion, of the police department, regardless of what you call community policing or a disconnect of police nowadays, the attitude and the mindset has not changed. The attitude
when you say,
go ahead, I'm sorry.
No, I was going to say, when you say the mindset and attitude has not changed, what are you referring to? Because the 50s was a very different time than to, you know, day and age 2015. So we're talking 60 some odd years. So
and
what do you mean?
I'm going to tell you.
Go ahead.
When I say the attitude and the mindset has not changed, in fact, it may in time. On the negative side, because back in the 50s, now I was born in the 50s, so grew up in the 60s, the 70s, 80s, and in my opinion, because I've experienced a lot of things throughout my 61 years, that the mindset and the attitude toward certain people has not changed. In fact, people think because we have a African-American president that we're making progress. Believe me, like I said, the attitude has not changed in 60 years that I've seen. In fact, up until this point, I think it's gotten worse.
Here's what I can understand where you're coming from, but I want you to take ethnicity out of the equation. I want to take it out of the equation. Well, just bear with me. Bear with me. There are black cops and white cops, all alike, Latino, Asian, whatever the case may be, that are...
Let me tell you something.
Wait. Remember, this is a panel. Let's keep it civil. There are cops, regardless of their ethnicity,
right,
that have beaten, brutalized, broken the law that they're sworn to uphold on all people. What we see on TV is that it's a lot of black people. I have a stat for you. And I don't know if you know about it or not. According to the Department of Justice, from 2000 and I got it right here, give me 2 seconds. From 2003 to 2009, okay, the racial origin of people killed while under arrest by percentage is kind of shocking to me. When I saw the stat, I was wondering, really? How come this isn't portrayed? Why is it always just a black kid on TV getting shot up and killed and so on and so forth? But from 2003 through 2009, 41.7% were white males, not Hispanic. 31.7% were black non-Hispanic. 20.3% were Hispanic. 3.6% were other. 2.6% were unknown, meaning they have different origins, like Native American or whatever the case may be. And this is something that came from the Department of Justice as of November 2011. That stat was put up there. And I found that very, very interesting, because what you see on TV, at least during that time, because during that time I was finished college, joined the military, and was part of, you know, something different. And we're living in an era where it's Clinton and Bush, or the end of the Clinton administration going strongly into the Bush administration, so on and so forth. Or, excuse me, while I'm smoking, you're in the Bush administration during that time frame.
Mm-hmm.
But what you saw on TV, if it wasn't the Iraq War or something like that, it was, yes, it was about a black man or whatever getting beat or killed or shot, or black on black crime and stuff like that. But I was
that's different.
Amazed when I saw. I know, but when we're talking about, you know, the police, this stat is under the condition of the police having someone under arrest and then these people getting killed while under arrest. I understand it's different if the guy's not under arrest, but he might be getting beat, or he might have gotten beaten, or whatever the case may be. I got that. That's not a question. But the stat, to me, was amazing, because...
No, it's not.
A lot of people... Well, a lot of people want to go on with, it's the black person getting beat. It's the black person getting beat.
You didn't hear me say a black person. I said the mindset and attitude had changed. And it illustrated when what you just said, it illustrated what I'm talking about. 41%. So 59%, roughly 59%. Of the people that got arrested and whatever that stat was, were minorities. Minorities. Now, you look at the percentage, and I don't have it in front of me. I wish I did. The percentage. Now, that back was back in 2009. 2008, if I'm not mistaken, is when Barack Obama got elected, if I'm not mistaken about that.
Correct.
Okay. So it only gives you 1 year of the Obama administration, all right, 6 years ago. So I'm not disputing your statistics, but that's 6 years ago. Now we're well into the Obama administration, and it seems like it's been a license by the police department. And this is a misconception of a lot of people that think that just white cops beat up minorities. Don't believe that, because some of the worst offenders, and I hate to say it, some of the worst offenders are minorities or minorities, meaning minority police officers on their on other minorities. So just because it's a policeman and a minority got beat up or killed, doesn't necessarily mean that it is a white cop. Understand that. I said mindset and attitude. I didn't say anything about the race of a police officer. Mindset and attitude. Mindset and attitude means if you're a minority, and it seems like it's even more prevalent now than it's ever been, that you're more likely to be looked at as a criminal, or some type of person that is of a criminal element. And then in that case, you are treated differently because you're considered a criminal element, regardless if you're under arrest or not. There's many instances of people being pulled over, walking the street, because of the mindset and attitude of a police officer in a certain neighborhood or just in any neighborhood, because of the disconnect from the community policing that was back years ago. I'm trying to wrap this up. Disconnect from the community policing years ago when the police officer either was out of his vehicle and interacting with the community, or walking the beat, or riding in the car and getting out, like you said, or he was living in that neighborhood. So he knew the pulse of that neighborhood and who and what were the bad ones in the neighborhood. Because most police officers don't live in their neighborhood, there's a disconnect. That's just seen as a job, and the mindset, and I keep on running this back, and the attitude is the neighborhood I'm in, I have a lot of criminals, or I have a lot of so-called criminal element that I have to deal with. So my mindset attitude is like, I got to be on edge, and I got to get the upper hand before they do.
Okay. I'm glad you brought that up, because that transitions into a story. And we're going to talk about Baltimore. We're going to talk about Ferguson. We're going to talk about Seattle. A lot of people aren't talking about Seattle right now, but I'm going to talk about it. But let's get to a situation where the break happened. Back in 2014, February 2014, I should say, in Oklahoma, a young man or a father, Luis Rodriguez, he was killed by five police officers in front of his daughter and his wife in the parking lot of a movie theater. Now, here's where some of the disconnect is. Luis Rodriguez, of course, looks, well, not of course, but he is brown and Latino. His wife, Nair Rodriguez, fair skin. The daughter, fair skin. Well, the daughter and the mother got into, I would say, a dispute, whereas the mother slapped the daughter. And Luis jumped in between them, trying to stop the situation from escalating. The police took notice. They came over. And never mind stopping the mother and daughter from going at it, they demanded the identification of Luis and who he was. Well, the story goes on to say that after the police demanded, I'll read it real quick. Miller reports that the police claim that Luis then began fighting with them, giving them grounds to kill him. The family has stated that Luis was only trying to sidestep them in order to prevent his wife from driving off. Now, here's what was said. Juani Rodriguez said that five officers beat her father to death right in front of her in the parking lot of a movie theater. When they flipped him, and this is a quote from her, when they flipped him over, you could see all the blood on his face. He was disfigured. You couldn't recognize him. By the time it was all over, Nair Rodriguez said that she knew her husband was dead. I saw him, his, quote, motionless body when people carry it to the stretcher. I knew he was dead. Nair says her husband was only trying to defuse the fight she was having with her daughter. She said when police asked her about it, she told them what happened. I told him I hit her, and he was just trying to reach me. Why didn't they arrest me? Johannes, my mom was taking a video and asking, what are they doing this for? Why? And It didn't give really an explanation. Now, the only reason why, the complexions of the family members and stated it was in Oklahoma is because there's a history in Oklahoma as well as in Baltimore, as well as in New York, as well as in L.A. of brutality.
All over the country. All over the country.
I got it. But there's a issue with people of color.
Yes.
When a couple is perceived to be mixed. This is probably the only ethnic part I'm going to talk about. But this man allegedly was fighting back when others were saying he's sidestepping because he's just trying to get to his wife, to stop his wife. But the police decided he was resisting, so they beat him to death. Now, I know this isn't the case all the time, but let's talk about this.
Wait a minute. Let me stop you there.
Okay.
And let me tell you something. If it wasn't for a videotape of a lot of instances, the police would be getting away with a lot of things. How about the guy that was in South Carolina that got shot in the back? And the cop was on videotape trying to set the guy up, but he didn't know he was on videotape. And that's why he got arrested and indicted for shooting the guy, 8 times in the back of whatever, some crazy amount, and the guy was running away from him. So,
correct.
Thank God.
Thank God for videotape. But I know people, and I'm one of them on this airwaves, but they refused to come on for whatever reason. They said he shouldn't have been running.
Give me a break.
Jerry,
give me a break.
This ain't the regular show. But I got you. I understand what you're saying. That, you know, whether he had broken the law or not, he did not do a violent act. He did not attack the cop. He did not do anything that was in any way aggressive to the cop.
Thank you.
But he ran, and the cop put 8 bullets in his back. I got it. We're going to get to it. Let's talk about what happened several years ago when a cop, a black cop in New York, was leading his bachelor party with his friends, killed by his own kind, police officers, that is. It was mistaken identity, but yet, this cop or police officer died at the hands of his own. For what reason, other than they thought he was somebody else? Regardless of asking about his identification or anything like that, just open fire.
You're missing the point.
Times have not changed. Go ahead.
I keep telling you the same thing, and I don't think you understand what I'm saying. First of all, it's mindset and attitude. The mindset and the attitude says that a minority, if they walk up on a minority, they're for the most part, a police officer think this guy's got the criminal intent. This guy, regardless, he could be the most straightest person. A minority going, even be a Republican, and I'm just trying to be funny here. The mindset and the attitude is that I'm walking up on trouble. So before anything jumps off, I'm going to react. And even though it's over an overreaction, I can justify it as long as there's no videotape because I'm a police officer. I can tell them this is what happened. This is what he tried to do. Just like this guy that ran away because I have a feeling I wasn't there. But because he ran away, he could have feared for his life. And apparently he was very well he very well thought the right thought because he died from that. So when you say that he shouldn't have been running away, just like the guy in Baltimore shouldn't have running away from cops, let me tell you something. It is a bad thing when and I get upset when people are trying to blame the victim for something that they would react to the same, probably the same way. The guy thought he was in fear for his life. Wait a minute. If the guy thought he was in fear for his life, I'm talking about the guy from South Carolina, just for example, or even the guy from Baltimore thought he was in fear for his life. That does not give a police officer the right to open fire on someone. Doesn't give him the right. Doesn't give him the right to put him in a paddy wagon and beat the crap out of him. Doesn't give him the right. The human being, just like everybody else, but because it's a minority, and I keep on stressing that, doesn't necessarily have to be a black man. Because of the minority, they are targeted and treated less, less like a human than most people. And let me say this too. And I'm trying to get my thought together about this because I want to make sure I get this right.
Hurry up.
This is what I wanted to say. Prison system and prisons are big business, huge business. I don't know if you have any stats there, but there's a big business to house people in prison. A lot of people get paid big money, and a lot of prisons are being built to house people. Prisons are big money.
I got that.
I'm done.
And I understand where you're going with it, but I want to bring it back to the situations in different areas since we're headed
sure,
that direction.
Sure.
I'm going to talk about the communities in which a lot of these incidents are happening. And I'm going to give you an example of it happened in the 60s. So it's your era, Jerry. It's called the broken window. And the situation is this. A philosophical doctor, an educator, I should say, if you want to get more clear, get clarified, or clear, you know what I mean. He did an experiment. He took a vehicle, put it in the Bronx, lifted the hood of the car, and left it. It goes 5 minutes later, and the car is vandalized. The car is first stripped by a family.
Okay.
A mother, father, two kids in the 60s.
Okay.
Okay. 5 minutes. 10 minutes later, then 10 minutes later, it's you know, on center blocks, and you know everything is gone. So he comes to California and goes to Palo Alto, California.
Okay.
Does the same exact thing. Leaves the car on the side, hood up. Nothing happened. So he says, a week goes by, vehicle's not touched. So he decided to break a window. So he starts wailing on the car. At that point, the educator says, others came to start wailing on the car too and started taking pieces of it. Now, here's the thing that kind of tripped me out with the study that he did. It was as he put it, middle-class white men who were doing a lot of this vandalism. But his conclusions were that places such as the Bronx versus places like Palo Alto, there's a different sense, property value, and ownership. In Palo Alto, California, according to this study, the value on someone else's property is as if it is yours, versus the property in the Bronx, which is the attitude of, I don't really care, it ain't mine, I need it. So he concluded, not by race, not by gender, but the areas dictated how people would react in certain situations. And I bring this up to say, how is that any different than community policing? The police in the Bronx react totally differently to situations, very similar situations, than the police in Palo Alto, California.
Or you think, wait a minute. You're telling me that the police will act, you're telling me the police will act different from the Bronx versus Palo Alto? Is that what you're telling me?
Yes, what I'm telling you is, and I'll go with it, is a Stanford psychologist, Philip Zimbardo. That's his name, Philip Zimbardo, 1969. This is when he did the study. But my feeling and my thought process is a New York City cop, Bronx to be exact, if that's his area, versus a California cop, Palo Alto area, will react differently to a similar situation. And I'll take it a step further. President Obama went on the Steve Harvey Morning Show and said that this isn't something that big government can jump in and take control over, because each state has its own laws, has its own way of dealing with, their legal systems, but we have guidelines for certain situations. We can only give these areas practices. So the Department of Justice can't say, you're going to arrest a guy the same way that you would arrest a guy in New York. Yes, you'll read them their rights. You'll do this, you'll do that. But other than that, how you go about it, it's up to the way that city's laws or government sees fit. So when a police officer in the Bronx comes up to the corner and sees some guys dressed like quote-unquote thugs, quote-unquote hoods, whatever the case may be, no matter what ethnicity they are, because there's some black ones, white ones, Latinos. I mean, nowadays, nowadays, you can't, or you shouldn't, let me put it that way, you shouldn't classify a person by the way they're dressed or by the way they act sometimes. A person with a GED, person with a GED might be just as insightful as a person with a doctorate degree. But you don't know the difference until you get to know them. The lack of community policing has pretty much done the same thing to the people. It's disenfranchised the people of every community, in the sense that just because you know he's from a certain area, you label him or her as a thug, as a whore, or whatever it is you want to label people. And Christopher did, what really got me on Christopher was that he labeled the rioters in Baltimore savages. Now, you know, we went into the whole definition of a savage and all this stuff, and I got it. However, I went back to, you know, what the pilgrims named the Indians. That's as far back as I go, knowing what people were called savages. They called African savages because they came to their land in Africa, learned some stuff, but because they weren't dressed in certain ways, they were labeled savages. When we perceive certain things, we as people begin to label, and then our labeling becomes our actions. Our actions turn to either negative or positive, sometimes neutral, but those behaviors is what drives a person to feel, do, and act. And last thing, and I'll let you jump in, Jerry, I had a conversation today. People with authority, not all, but some people with authority use it because they have it.
That's right.
Not because it's for the betterment of the people, but because they have it. And I believe a lot of these cops that are going out here killing, and some of them get away, because don't get me wrong, the indictment of the police officers in Baltimore, okay, that's great. They indicted the police officers in the Rodney King beating. They all got off. But the perception is, the perception is that these young kids, these millennials, say, okay, you keep talking. We don't see no action. This is a microwave society. You keep talking and talking. We see no action. So we're going to do what we want to do, what we think is best, and that's destroy. And we don't care what we destroy. We'll destroy our area. And guess what, ladies and gentlemen? Guess what? Their area is done. So whose area is next? Whose area is next if the injustice or perceived injustice is not answered? JT, jump in there, and we're going to move on.
No, like I keep on saying, just because, you know, you get arrested. Okay, you did something wrong, you get arrested. That does not give a police officer the right to abuse you just because you may have done something wrong. Doesn't give them the right. Doesn't give them the right, quite naturally, for you to wind up in a pine box. That does not give you the right. And thank God for videotape, because some of these officers, and I keep on saying this, know how to fabricate a story that is leaning their way. How many of minorities have run up against rogue cops, and rogue cop has said his side of the story, and either his superiors or internal investigation within the department, and I got a problem with that. When they do an investigation, it's an internal investigation. So the people that are part of the department that this guy is investigating him. So they're going to cover their butt, because it's a bad reflection on them if he's found
guilty
of something. But how many times without videotape, with the testimony or the report from the police officer, which is he's going to know how to write that report so it favors him versus the so-called victim, and has gotten away with it. And that's the problem. That's the systemic problem. Besides being targeted, if you're a minority, and treated inhumanely if you're within custody, then if you're falsely imprisoned, I'm just reading a story about some parole officers in Ramapo. I don't know if you got this, in Ramapo, that were pulled over by several police officers and held at with guns drawn. The police officers jumped out of their vehicles with guns drawn to five parole officers that were in the vehicle, not doing anything. They were supposed to be going to arrest someone or bust someone, and didn't give the courtesy call to the local police department. So they got a report. That local police department got a report, either local police, state police, doesn't make a difference, that there were several black men in a vehicle with bulletproof vests on. So what did the cops do? They pulled the vehicle over with guns drawn and held them, even with guns drawn, when they were identified, when they identified themselves, still had the guns drawn against them, including the shotgun. Because why? Because they were a minority. Why? Let me
Gary?
Ask you something. Yeah.
Okay. I haven't heard about this story. I didn't know that this story came out. But, okay. What I don't want to do is say it's white versus everybody. That's
no,
what
no.
I don't
what I'm saying, I didn't say anything about white. I didn't say anything about black. I said minorities, and I said police officers. And you have to understand what I'm saying. I said minorities and police officers. Police officers come in all shades and colors. And just because that police officer may be the same racial background of the minority that he's arresting doesn't necessarily mean he's going to get treated right. In fact, he could get perceived to get even treated even worse. So, and I'm not saying all cops are bad, but if you look for the last few years, especially within the Obama administration, and I think the racial divide has increased since the second term of Obama, it's going to blow up in a lot of people's faces, including places like Baltimore. And I have to say this, and you may not like what I'm going to say here, but I'm going to say this anyway. They were marching peacefully for a while, and no media was around at all.
Oh, I got it.
From what I understand, there was a confrontation. Confrontations, I should say, and verbal abuse from others that caused things to escalate. And the only reason the media was aware or got involved with this is because when things started getting lit up, and then the media wanted to go down to capitalize on why are these. And I'll put in quotation marks, thugs, which is a phrase for another name, doing all this. But there was no media around when the fact this kid got abused, and they were marching peacefully. Only until it escalated did the media decide to come down there and then condemn all the people that were rioting. So, you know what? I'm glad they ride it because that's the only way they were going to get hurt.
Okay, listen. Hold on. All right. I almost got a character for a second.
That's the only way they got hurt. That's the only way they got hurt.
You know what? It's like you're reading my notes because I was going to go into this way,
right.
But you took me there. I'm not glad they ride it. Because what's going to happen is all those mothers and fathers and people that own the moms and pops are out of business, and that city needs to rebuild. But I'm afraid that if these officers, these six officers, are not convicted, Baltimore's going to burn, Townsend's going to burn, and all those other places are going to burn, and martial law is going to happen. It's going to be bad. But because of the way things are, when you said they're glad they're right, it made me bring up this subject about NWA and Ice-T. And NWA, if you don't know what that means.
I know what it means.
Well, I know you know what it means, but for those listening that don't know what it means.
Just Google
it. Look it up. Yeah, just Google it. But it's the first quote unquote gangster rap group. Eazy-E, Eric Wright, Dr. Dre, Andre, what's Dr. Dre's last name? I forgot his last name. Lorenzo Prodigy or MC Ren. Everybody knows Ice Cube, O'Shea, and DJ Yella, called NWA. Straight Outta Compton is one of their biggest songs to put them on the map. Gangsta rap came about mid to late 80s. And in this movie, when they're promoting and stuff like that, and it was even before the movie, Ice Cube was saying stuff at press conferences about rap, about gangster rap. A reporter asked him, "Don't you feel like you're perpetuating the stereotype of the angry black man, da 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 da?" And Ice Cube said, "We're just giving voice to the streets about what's going on to us in the streets."
Right.
And shortly thereafter, the song, and I'm going to say it, "Fuck the Police" came out.
Mm-hmm.
What it was. And mm-hmm. They got banned from playing that one track during their concerts. Matter of fact, they got arrested. I forget which city it was, but they got arrested on stage when they did this. And it's in the movie. It's a big turning point in the movie. Because shortly thereafter, the Rodney King situation came about. And then shortly after the Rodney King situation, Ice-T came out with Cop Killer. Now, what is this? Why am I bringing this up? I'm bringing this up because I grew up, I was in high school throughout all this time, junior high school and high school throughout this time frame. And for my generation, that's when there was a strong urge for distrust of the police, because the police were doing a lot of shady things, getting caught, but not punished. Again, not every police officer is bad. I have some police officer friends, MPs that I know, and stuff like that. So I don't want you to misunderstand or misquote or whatever it is you're thinking. I like the police. I really do. I'm just giving you the background the mindset of some of these young men.
I'm glad you do.
Say again?
I said, I'm glad you do.
There's a mindset of these young men and women of this day and age where their parents and their uncles and aunts grew up with a society that pretty much said, you don't matter until you riot, until you destroy your own. And then when you destroy your own, we're not going to give you a loan to rebuild your area. You know why? Because you don't have to take care of your area. We're going to let corporate America come in if they want to, after the property has dropped a jillion percent, sell it to them for a cheap price. They'll come in, put their CVS, put their Starbucks, put their whatever, and move you out. It's happening in Washington, D.C. right now. It's happened in Washington, D.C. over the past 20 years, matter of fact. Degentrification. Look it up if you don't know what it is. Where you migrate people, you move a set of people out of one area into another, build up that area better, and bring new inhabitants in. It's happening all over the world. Detroit, I guarantee you, when Detroit rebounds, and Detroit isn't a big black populace or urban populace, it might be now, but when it rebuilds and resurfaces, you're not going to see a lot of minorities there. And I'm not making this a black and white issue, but what I'm trying to get across to you is the mindset of these young men and women. They feel disenfranchised. I'm not going to be Farrakhan, but Farrakhan spoke a lot about feeling disenfranchised and how the black man has been disenfranchised throughout this entire history of the United States. But it's not just black men. It's all people. All people that don't have the money, power, or authority.
Well, you just named it.
I was going to say, those that do, some try. I'm not going to lie. Some try. But
so if you have...
Go ahead. Ask your question.
So you're saying, this is what I'm saying. Power, money, and means. If you don't... If you control that, along with the legal system, you can control a people. You can control a level of people. Now, there's people that are successful. There's minorities that are successful, and people on the other side of the aisle are going to say, "Well, if they can do it, you can do it." Well, that's true. But everybody's circumstance is different. If you're in an area that is controlled by the majority power, and when I say power, I'm saying legal, financial, and employment. If I want to put it that way, it's hard to. For lack of a word, pull yourself up by your bootstraps, because those bootstraps are controlled by the power that is. So the other side of that, they say, well, why don't you start your own business? Well, start your own business, you need, for the most part, you need a helping hand from somebody. Exactly. And you have to use the financial part of that. You have to lose the legal part of that to be able to legally start a business. And if you are, and the majority of them are, if you are a minority and you get placed in or incarcerated for any particular thing, whether it's trumped up, whether it's real charges, those things are very difficult to come by, meaning you won't be able to really get a loan because who's going to give a loan to someone that's been incarcerated, or being able to legally start a business will be very difficult because you've been incarcerated. So it's a vicious circle, and it's just another way to control a certain part of the population. That's why I keep on saying prisons are big business, because besides incarcerating, it does a lot more than just incarcerate you.
I agree. However, I want to bring this back because it kind of ties into what you just said, community policing. If I know Joe Blow's grandma, and I'm a cop, I'm walking my beat, or I'm driving my beat, and I get out to talk to some people that, you know, I'm trying to get close to in the community, I can find out if Joe Blow's up to no good, because I build that rapport with people in that community. I don't have to live there, but let me go in and spend some money at the local carryout, get my laundry clean there. It's not going to be overnight that the people are going to start to trust you, but at some point, it's going to change. How does it change is the question. How do we revert back to the trust the police once had? I'm not going to say that, because I think it's possible.
Not happen.
How do
it's
we
not
do
happen.
It? I believe, and you know what? One of my good friends, I told him about the situation. He said, you know what? You want more police to do community policing and walk and beat and stuff like that. Are you willing to pay a higher tax? In fact, it's one of my coworkers. He said, you know, you want this, but are you willing to pay 30% tax? so they can pay these police officers. And when he said that, I was like, I'm going to pay 30% more taxes to get police because I'm already getting taxed 10% on food and stuff like that. But if you think money should be a reason not to have the police or have the added police, then that tells me you're part of the problem.
Well, hello.
You are.
Hello.
And who's
part of the problem?
The person that says, I'm not willing to pay the 30%. I'm not willing to do this because that's their money. Got it.
Yeah, but you're paying 30%.
If you want,
go ahead, I'm listening.
No, my whole point is that you have people that join the police force for the right reasons. You have people that do things in law enforcement, whether it's, no matter what it is, whether it's the police, FBI, ATF, you know, military, whatever it is, they join for the right reasons. At some point, they get, under depression or under the guise of, you know what, I'm not doing much, I'm not making a big difference. Or they say, you know what, why am I doing, you know, 12-hour days and getting paid $40,000 when I can do whatever and make a whole bunch of money doing it? Rick Ross, prime example, former correctional officer at a Florida prison. Former correctional officer now. But he's a big-time rapper talking about smoking weed, hurting people, and doing other things. I'm not sure if that is, you know, true or not about the stuff he did. I don't know. But he took on the name Rick Ross, which is a well-known drug smuggler, who also, if you look at your history, and again, we can say alleged because no one has ever been convicted of it, but allegedly was aided by congressmen, senators, and at the time, the first George Bush and the FBI to bring weapons and drugs into the inner cities of America. It's history, ladies and gentlemen. I'm not making it up. I am not making... Read your history. And you might say, well, that's one person's point of view. Well, history is written by people. And it's their point of view. You can shape history and write history however you want. You know how I know it's true? Go to a school in the state of Texas. Go to a school in the state of Texas where they recently, a year or so ago, changed their history books to classify Native Americans as something else and to show that the way America was ultimately created was not so bad. That the Louisiana Purchase wasn't a deal gone wrong on our end. I'm telling you, people that write history and then they have the power to change in the school systems, Rick Perry, former governor of Texas. It's amazing. So when these kids learn these things in the schools, on the street, and they see these things on TV, and you said it, Jerry, with video, social media, instantaneous reaction is going to happen. Instantaneous. People don't get upset. But you know what? May 1st was what? National Protest Day. National Protest Day.
Yeah.
So it's a recognized day in the United States where people can assemble and protest whatever it is they want to protest. I'm going to go to Seattle for this one. And I want to thank Rocky Parrish, who is supposed to be on today. I'm not sure what happened, but you're supposed to be on today for this bit of information. State of Seattle, on this day, National Protest Day, I believe it was over 300 or 400 people assembled, all dressed in black, marched in Seattle, started rioting, and the police shot at the streets with tear gas and rubber bullets. Some police actually were, you know, had fought some of the protesters and incarcerated them, released them shortly thereafter. I'm not sure if all of them got released, but a great deal of them got released. But of the ones they did arrest, machetes were found, shanks. You know what a shank is? It's a homemade weapon, a homemade sharpened object used to kill people in prison. Knives and all other types of things were found on some of these people. Now, this was supposed to be just a regular protest. I failed to mention one thing. They were all white. And the only place to report it on a big scale was Seattle News. And that's not national. But the video went viral. So I don't know if Seattle, because I know Seattle is a free state, Washington, I should say, is a free fight state. If you don't know what a free fight state is, you can walk up somebody and y'all can just start fighting on the streets, and that's that. You break it up, whatever, nobody gets arrested. Unless some type of damage to somebody's property is done. It's a free fight state. Now, I don't know how these people got off, how it didn't get blasted on, you know, big media, that this quiet protest got turned into a riot. People fought the police, and these weapons were found. Baltimore, got it. There was a riot. They claimed, or the media stated, that the Black Guerrilla family were three gangs comprised of the Black Guerrilla family began the rioting and stuff like that. That might be true, might not be true. I don't know. But the protest turned to a riot, and everybody's labeled savages, thugs, criminals, and the city starts to burn. Now, they did it because of what happened to Freddie Gray. These people up in Seattle did it because it was National Protest Day. And they had weapons. Listen, there is divide in this country. There's a divide. It's not so much, well, I'm not going to say it's not so much. It is a racial divide. But right now, the biggest hot divide is the police versus the people. It takes me back to, it's a movie, The Dark Knight Rises, Batman, the last Batman to come out, where Bane, he's taking over the city, and then he breaks out all the criminals, and the criminals take over the justice system, and he says, you know, the people that swore to take care of you and protect you are the true criminals, and so on and so forth. It was a social comment. It was a social comment. Now, I don't know if the director of Batman meant for that to come out like that, but that's the way I took it. A social commentary on what's going on in this world, whereas you have corrupt police officers, you have corrupt congressmen and representatives and stuff like that that have political gain. We can even talk about old boy that was the mayor of Detroit. He did some of the same stuff other mayors and governors did, accepted gifts and stuff like Kwame Nfume. It's not Kwame Nfume. It's, oh my gosh, sorry, Kwame Nfume. I mean to put you up. No, it was, oh my gosh, it was something like that. I can't remember his name. He was the mayor of Detroit, and he got arrested for embezzlement and stuff like that. And then Jesse Jackson's son, Senator Jackson. Same situation. A lot of these congressmen, they got out of it. They didn't. But when you look at how our system is set up. It's supposed to be innocent until proven guilty, beat up, portrayed as a villain, and you might make it to your court date.
Yeah, you get people that think that and I was hoping he would come on, but he didn't, that you shouldn't have got arrested. You shouldn't have done something wrong, and then you wouldn't put yourself in that situation. Now, that's true. I understand. But that doesn't give a right, and I went back and forth with a certain person on Facebook, to get beat up or, in fact, killed. Just because you put yourself in that situation doesn't mean that you get treated any differently than any other person that gets arrested. And it seems like there's been a lot of minorities, and you notice I'm saying minorities, I'm not saying one particular minority, that are on the bad side of getting arrested and either losing their life or getting severely beaten in handcuffs or in shackles or whatever you want to call them. So they're incapacitated as it is. And let me put it another way, because I said this on Facebook also to this individual. The police are trained to subdue a person safely. They're trained to subdue a person safely, whether it's one, two, or five. They're trained to subdue a person safely, to protect themselves from possible lawsuit and protect the person that they are subduing. So when you have things that happen that's out of the ordinary, a lot of people, like the person I talked to or text back and forth on Facebook, is blaming the victim when in fact a trained professional has the upper hand. Plain and simple. A trained professional is trained to be able to handle situations like any situation. And when things happen out of the ordinary, way out of the ordinary, it's very hard for me to believe a police officer when he gives his account and it doesn't make any sense and he still gets off because he's a police officer and there's no video.
Well, you know, Jerry, I was hoping that a lot of people would call in and
I was hoping
be a part of the panel. Some, you know, chose not to. And here's the deal. I'm be honest with you. You didn't call in. You didn't voice your opinion. So if you don't like what we're saying, or I'm saying, or Jerry's saying, it really doesn't matter because this was the forum to do it. Sit down, talk about it, not on a Facebook message and stuff like that. I got it. Some people don't like being heard on the radio or some of that. But listen, here's an opportunity to give your views. What's been said here tonight, it's not from one side, because Jerry has some differing views than I do, but we agree on a lot of things. Why are we giving a minority view? Because we're minorities. Jerry grew up in that type of environment, a much worse environment, if I'm not mistaken. We didn't have all the bad stuff happening to him. They did more of a when they marched and when they did those things, they couldn't hit back. They couldn't throw back. And if they did, it would be way worse than it is. Well, not way worse than it is now, but some of the results would have been the same.
See, and that's the problem, Victor. That's the problem, and that's why what took place in Baltimore had to take place. For the simple fact is, there was no one around that I can that I knew of, and I didn't know, really know about it, and that's the truth. I didn't know about it until they started blowing up Baltimore, and then the whole story came out, and then that's when the press got involved and the TV media got involved, trying to cover it and saying how much of a thug mentality was down there, when in fact what they were protesting peacefully, nobody was listening, nobody heard them, nobody wanted to, you know, they're just walking and talking, basically. Okay, they're just walking and talking. So, you know, sometimes you need to be shook up. Sometimes you need to have a slap in the face to open your eyes and say, what the hell is going on here? And even though it was the way they did it in Baltimore, I'm not saying it's going to solve anything the way they did it, but they woke some people up, and the mayor of Baltimore is now calling for a Department of Justice investigation into the Baltimore Police Department and their practices. So it's a Democratic Democratic mayor, but she relented and said this is the best thing for my city, and she's supposedly allowing the Department of Justice coming into Baltimore, and with a fine-tooth comb, probably, to look over the police department and, like I said, their practices.
Well, as a former resident of Baltimore, I owned a house there at one point. Yeah, it's bad. If you ever saw anybody out there listening, or any jury, if you ever viewed the show The Wire, that type of stuff happens. Really happens.
Really? Really?
That is not fiction. All of the stuff that happened on The Wire is real. It was just put on TV. And I understood I'm going to break it down a little bit. Like when McNulty, towards the last season, he's one of the main characters. He begins to do dummy investigations in order to get manpower and stuff like that, so he can get one of the biggest drug kingpins off the streets. So he takes a victim. It's a person that died, and he pretty much makes it seem like it's a strangler, a serial killer on the loose. And what he found out was, because the dummy murders were happening in a certain area, no one cared. So he said, okay, well, let me find some other people that have died and set up some things in certain areas, in other areas, where people really would start to care, and if it was a white person. Most of them were white, but in different areas, because Baltimore is full of a diverse group of people. Don't get it twisted. Baltimore is just not black. Baltimore is so multicultural, you would be surprised, in the bad areas. But the moral of the story is, he did this whole elaborate scheme in order to get, you know, the police force to fund him, and then the federal guys to fund it, and he would secretly farm out police officers so he can do some quote-unquote real police work. Now, again, this is a TV series. However, stuff like this happens because you can see the guys on the streets. You can see them. It's not hard to see a plainclothes cop in the city of Baltimore. It's not hard. They're there. You see them, community policing. But at the same time, there is such a history of corruption in the Baltimore Police Department that people have become desensitized to it, because it's Baltimore. It happened in Townsend. It happens in Cheverly, Maryland. It happens in Montgomery County. Not even Montgomery County anymore. Montgomery County is the new D.C., because that's where a lot of the people that used to live in D.C. have been pushed to and moved. Chevy Chase. Let something happen in Chevy Chase, Maryland, which is right there. 16th Street is like the line in D.C. between Maryland and D.C., and Chevy Chase is a very well-off area. If a riot like that would happen there, there will be so many people, I'm sorry, they will be dead. Then there'll be a national attention to fixing a problem. I'm not advocating anybody going out and doing anything. I disagree with Jerry. I really do. I don't think it needed to happen. I don't think the riots needed to happen. I do believe that something needed to be done. Rioting was not the answer. I'm sorry, it wasn't. But it did get the attention. It was effective. But those areas need to be rebuilt. And who's going to put the money into an area if all they see are thugs, criminals, you know, people who don't care, people who don't want to do right?
Well, let me ask you something. Why do you think they don't care? Well, they perceive that they don't care and don't do right because they feel helpless. They feel They feel helpless. They don't feel like they're in disenfranchised. That nobody cares. No matter what they do, they're not going to be able to get out of their situation because the so-called man or whatever is trying to keep them down.
You want me to answer the question, or were you making a statement, or you want me to answer the question?
Answer the question.
Okay. The reason why people will not invest in that area is because they destroy their own area. You think about it.
I understand what you're saying. They don't care because they think nobody else cares. So they don't care about what they have because they think nobody else cares. They say the heck with it. It's a vicious circle. I understand exactly what you're saying. It's a vicious circle. They don't care because they think nobody else cares.
On that, where I bought my house, up the street, literally up the street. I know we say that in inner city a lot, up the street, but literally up the street from where I bought my house, a Starbucks was supposed to be, you know, put in there. They were going to, you know, open up a Starbucks, trying to change the community because the community started to change. But little did I know, the street that I bought my house on, is not a very good street because in the daytime, well, it looks beautiful because nobody's outside. But at nighttime, totally different story. And it's right around the block, literally, from $300,000-$400,000 houses. But because that area was considered a bad area, Starbucks never came. Now, it's probably there now, or it was there now, but while I was there, it was just talk because they were afraid of investing in an area that was still too dangerous. And that's what I'm saying, ladies and gentlemen. If you look at the cities around America, some of them, they're very tight-knit, and they don't allow corporate America in. I'm in an area right now, Tri-Valley area, Pleasanton, Livermore, and Dublin. Dublin's the boom city, so to speak. So they're doing anything and everything to build this area up, and they're doing a good job. Livermore, and I call it Mayberry, because there's a lot of single-lane traffic streets, you know, going back and forth, but single lanes. Great area. It's the wine country, so to speak. It's the wine country. They don't want a subway within 3 to 5 miles of their city. They don't want a Walmart or a big store like that, a chain, in their city. And I was at a Christmas dinner with my wife at her job. And we got to talking about it. And I was told, because I asked the question, why not? We don't want that type of traffic here. We want to keep it small. We want to keep it family. Because what happens is, when that subway system comes maybe within a mile, which isn't long, of the city limits, people from Oakland, people from Richmond, people from all over that don't live the same lifestyle as people in Livermore are going to come there, shop, steal, and ruin their city.
Well, that's a perception. That's a perception.
I know, but that is their perception. At least the people at that party and the men I was talking to, they don't allow certain people in that area.
What's the certain people? Did you ask them who's the certain people? I sure would have asked them who's the certain people.
No. Listen to what I'm saying. They're saying, I know what you're getting to, Jerry, but the point is, a criminal element, whether it's black, white, Latin, or whatever. There are criminals in the city.
Victor, what? You don't get it twisted. Now you get me. Well, you get me pissed off now. You get me pissed off now. But the fact is, it's obvious.
We got 90 seconds. You got 90 seconds. You got to make it quick. Make it quick. Real quick. Don't take all the time either.
It's obviously they weren't minorities in there. That's basically what you're saying. They didn't want minorities in there.
They're minorities.
Specific minorities.
Minorities.
You're missing the point. You're missing the point. They didn't want more minorities. You know, people who are majority are afraid of being a minority. Do you know that? The majority is afraid of being the minority. Definitely afraid of that.
Oh, yes. That's why there's a big push for immigration reform and how to keep the borders locked, because by a certain time, Latino is supposed to be the dominant ethnicity in America. Now, listen, I didn't want to get into that. I want to get into community policing. We've gone a little bit longer than I wanted to go. We touched upon a lot of topics. But ladies and gentlemen, we're about to go off the air. We're about to go off live air. We're not going to do it overtime. I want to thank Jerry for coming on and speaking and saying what he had to say. I really wish Christopher Shirley, Rocky Parrish, or Bree Lemoyne would have came on so we'd have more debate. I really didn't plan to talk. So thanks for listening. We appreciate you coming on, and I'm going to take us out with our regular music instead of Absolute Power. That's the wrong song. I don't know what happened. Wow, there it is.
Fantasy, sports, and politics.
Get ready to
run. You wanna talk smack? You in the right place. So take a step back before I get all up in your face. I know you got to live, you know I got mine. But there's like 50 other dudes holding on the phone line. Your voice will be heard, sir.
Next caller, please.
And if I don't concur, we can agree to disagree.
We're talking fantasy, sports, and politics.